Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is March the 26th. We are beginning Parshas Acharemos, page 636. Parshas Acharemos will begin with the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the service of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. This is the laning that we read on Yom Kippur day. In the morning of Yom Kippur, the Kriyas HaTorah is Parshas Acharemos. The first part of Parshas Acharemos is what we read on Yom Kippur morning, because it describes the special service of Yom Kippur itself. So that is what we're going to be talking about, we'll discuss a little bit about its location here in the Chumash. I mean, it makes sense that it appears in Parshas in Sefer VaYikra, because it's discussing the Karbanos of Yom Kippur. It's got to be somewhere, and Sefer VaYikra makes sense. This is where we go through Karbanos, but we'll try to give a little more of an explanation than that. We begin, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe. Hashem spoke to Moshe, Acharei Mos, Shnei B'nei Aaron, after the deaths of the two sons of Aaron, B'karvasam B'fnei Hashem, Vayamusu, when they brought before Hashem, and they died. They got close to Hashem, and they died. This picks up the storyline from Parshas Shmini. We know that back in Parshios, at the end of Tzav, and the beginning of Shmini, we had the Miluim. We had the days of the inaugural days, both of the Mishkan and of the Kohanim themselves, where Aaron and his sons were initiated as Kohanim. The last 7 days of the month of Adar were the 7 days of the Miluim, and then Parsha Shmini began. Vayihi Bayom HaShmini was on the eighth day, which, as we pointed out, was the date of the eighth day of the Miluim, was the first day of the month of Nisan, which is tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We bench Rosh Chodesh is past Shabbos, it was Parshat HaChodesh, and tomorrow night Tuesday day would be the Yom HaShmini, would be the eighth day that we read about in Parshat Shmini. On that day, it was a wonderful day. Many great things happened on that day with the beginning of the Mishkan and the Karbanos of the Nisim, of the heads of each of the tribes. They began their Karbanos on that day. It was Rosh Chodesh, of course, and the Mishkan. Now we had a functioning Mishkan with that day. A terrible tragedy happened on that day with the deaths of two of the four sons of Aaron. The Nadav and Avihu were killed because they brought an Esh Zara, they brought a foreign fire on that day. It was unclear exactly where they brought the fire, but they brought a fire that should not have been brought. And we're going to discuss what they did and what the Kohen Gadol is going to be commanded to do here presently. That was on the Yom HaShmini. After that discussion is over, then we have Hashem giving special commandments to Moshe, to Aaron, about the Kohanim not going into the Beis HaMikdash if they have had anything to drink, and other types of laws. And from there, we segued into the parashios of Tazria and Mitzora, where we had first the end of Parashat Shmini, then Tazria and Mitzora, where we had many halachos of Tuma and Tara, but halachos of Tuma and Tara as they pertain to Karbanos, and what happens as they pertain to the Beis HaMikdash, of course, Tzaras. We just had a lengthy discussion of other types of Tuma that come from discharges of the body. That was the end of Parashat Mitzora. And that was our whole discussion. Here, chronologically, we're picking up really from the Yom HaShmini. Now, whether this commandment took place on the eighth day, right after the deaths of the sons of Aaron, or afterwards, it's not clear whether this took place, whether the commandment from Hashem to Moshe took place right away or a little bit later, but it doesn't really matter because Hashem himself is connecting this to that story. Because the Torah says, He said this to Moshe after the deaths of the sons of Aaron. Now the Medrash itself, which Rashi cites over here, makes this connection, it's an obvious point, and says that the reason why it says acharei mos, after the deaths of the sons of Aaron, is because since Hashem is about to give the commandment to Aaron and to subsequent Kohanim Gedolim about how they're supposed to behave when they actually enter the Holy of Holies, where they're going to offer, as we'll see, the main event that takes place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur, is the burning of Kitores, the burning of incense, even though there's also blood that's going to be brought in there, but the main thing is the burning of the Kitores. That's the whole thing centers around the Kitores. And what the sons of Aaron did is they brought Kitores when they weren't supposed to. They brought an Esh Zara, a foreign flame. As we learned then, it may have been in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it may have just been in the regular Kodesh, on the Golden Mizbeach. It's unclear exactly where they did it, but nevertheless, they got too close in a way that they should not have. And now Aaron is going to be told to get as close as any human being ever gets by going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, Hashem prefaces it by invoking the death of his sons. As the Medrash says, Rashi says, that what a doctor can tell a person that I want you to be healthy. In order for you to be healthy, you need to eat this and stay away from that and do this exercise and don't do this behavior. That's what they can tell them. That's one way of speaking to a person. Or a doctor could say to a person, you know that the way that you're behaving, the way that you're eating, that's what so-and-so did, and that's why so-and-so is no longer living. Mm-hmm. I want you to live, so therefore I want you eating this, and don't eat that, and behave this way, and don't behave that way. So the second way of saying it is a much more powerful message, because it's comparing this person to what happened, unfortunately, to the other person. So it's a much more powerful message. So Hashem here is giving a very powerful message to Aaron and to all subsequent Kohanim Gedolim that this is the way to do it. Don't do what the sons of Aaron did and were killed because they got too close in a manner that they should not have and they weren't commanded to do it. Now we really dissected what the sons of Aaron did back then. We showed it was a very subtle Avera, what they did. It was on their level that it was an Avera, but nevertheless, it was wrong. And here Hashem is saying, don't do what they did, rather do this. This is the way to properly get close to me in the service with the Ketores, with the incense in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Holy of Holies, on Yom Kippur. Obviously, this must have been said to Aaron sometime between Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when his sons died, and the following Yom Kippur, which would be the 10th of Tishrei, the following year, which is a little over 6 months. So sometime in there, that's when this was said, and when Hashem said it, he mentions the deaths of the sons of Aaron. So it may have been said on that day, on the 8th day of the Miluim, it may have been said the next day, it may have been said 3 months later, but somehow, between that, during that time, it happened. The Gemara tells us, excuse me, not the Gemara, the Medrash says that that on Yom Kippur, when this is read, when we read this on Yom Kippur, if a person, when the Baal Kriya reads this, if a person can properly think of what the sons of Aaron were and who they were and what we lost with their deaths, and in thinking about that, a person can become emotional and actually shed tears over the deaths of the sons of Aaron at that moment on Yom Kippur, then all their sins are forgiven. A person can do that. Now, that's a very difficult thing to do because we don't, on the davening on Yom Kippur, we don't make this into a highly emotional time of the davening. We make Shmona Esrei a very emotional time for the davening. We make Unisane Tokef, Yizker, Avinu Malkeinu, Slichos, the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs. Right? There's many parts of the Yom Kippur davening, Kol Nidre. There's many parts of the Yom Kippur davening, Ne'ilah, that we really make it an emotional thing. And the atmosphere in Shul is geared to creating an emotional space for people at those times of the davening. This is not one of them. This is not one of the times where we kind of create an atmosphere that lends itself to feel emotional over the deaths of the sons of Aaron. So it's not an easy thing to do in the way we have davening set up. Could it theoretically be done in a different way? I guess so. It would be a little tricky because it's Torah reading. So you call up the Kohen makes the bracha, and then the Baal Kriya reads. So it's a little difficult to make it into something that's more emotional. But nevertheless, if a person is able themselves to think it through and actually realize what we lost and cry over it, then that is a surefire recipe to achieve forgiveness for all of one's sins on Yom Kippur. So again, Hashem says to Moshe, after the deaths of the sons of Aaron, when they got too close to Hashem and they died. So what did he say to him? Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Daber al Aaron achicha, speak to Aaron your brother. Ve'al yavo v'chol eis el hakodesh. He should not come at any time into the kodesh, into the holy place. Mi beis la paroches. From the house, from the entrance of the house, to the paroches, to the curtain, el pinea kapores, to the front of the kapores, asher al ha'aron, which was on top of the aron, v'lo yomus, and he will not die. Meaning, he should not enter into the kodesh ha-kadoshim, he should not enter into the Holy of Holies, and die. He shouldn't do that. Rather, ki be'anon e'ra'e ala kapores, for in a cloud I will be seen on the kapores. Now that pasuk is not an easy pasuk to translate. In fact, let's read it in the English to see if they do a better job than I did. It says, he shall not come at all times into the sanctuary within the curtain in front of the cover that is upon the ark, so that he shall not die. For in a cloud I will appear upon the ark cover. Okay, so their translation, mi beis la paroches, means within the curtain. He should not enter into the curtain. Okay, but it seems like a very wordy pasuk. It says, don't go at any time, I would have said, don't go at any time into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Or don't go past the curtain. It's very wordy. Don't go at any time into the holy place that is beyond the curtain, that is on top of the, that is in front of the kapores, which is on top of the aron, so that you shouldn't die. For in a cloud, I will be seen over the kapores. Now, the kapores, as you may remember, is the covering of the aron. The aron is a box, which is plated with gold, that has poles that are meant to carry it. In the box, in the Aron, are the Luchos, and also Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah, there's a debate whether it's inside or on the side of the Aron. Mm-hmm. And then there's a covering. The covering is a lid, and the lid has on top of it the Keruvim, the angelic cherubs that are on top of it with their wings. That's the Kapores. The paroches, those two words are easy to confuse, the paroches is the curtain that separates between the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, and the Kodesh, the plain sanctuary. When he uses the word Kodesh over here, it means the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. The Torah doesn't use those phrases, Kodesh HaKadoshim and Kodesh. That's a Mishnah phrase. The Torah just refers to the Beis HaKapores, the place of the kapores, that's the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the phrase you usually see in the Navi when it refers to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. So they shouldn't go in there at all times. For in a cloud, I am seen upon the kapores. That last line of the pasuk, I'll get back to the rest of the pasuk in a moment, but that last line of the pasuk is, the simple meaning is, why should he not go in? Because he's going to die. Why will he die if he goes in when he's not supposed to? Because I am always there, hovering over the kapores in a cloud. Of course, what does that mean? Hashem is always there. Hashem is not there. Hashem is not here. Hashem is not, I mean, there's no, you can't put Hashem anywhere. Hashem is
everywhere.
When you say everywhere, what does that mean? It says Moloch HaLaretz Kevodo, right? Yeah. I don't know what it means, he's everywhere, but it means you can't pigeonhole him. He's not in a specific place. He is the place. There is no hamakom. So the it means the cloud that represents him is always there over the kaporos. You want to say something about that?
Does it mean that it's always on the kaporos or kaporos? Yeah, or.
That's
on Yom Kippur. I mean, okay, how do you derive that it's always there?
It could mean that is the place when I appear there.
Okay.
Therefore, it is a very dangerous place for a person to just barge into.
But it doesn't mean he's there necessarily. The cloud is not necessarily there.
Not necessarily all the time, right. Okay.
I don't want to reference the cloud to Yom Kippur because when he does Ketoret.
Okay, so that's good. So that's the second way of explaining it. The first way of explaining it is that Hashem represents himself there with a cloud. Perhaps not all the time, but at times he represents himself there. Therefore, it's a very, very holy place. And you don't go barging in. I wouldn't walk into your house without knocking or without being invited. So you don't walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim without Hashem inviting you in. It's his place. That's the simple meaning. But there's the other way of reading it, which is Mrs. Starkman just said, is that Hashem says the only way that you can come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is with the cloud. Only with a cloud can I be seen over the kaporos. Is it permitted for you to come in and see me with the cloud? What cloud? The cloud, meaning the smoke that is created when you burn the ketores, you burn the incense, and there's a cloud that comes up. So that's the appropriate way to come in and visit me, which we are now going to explain in detail. Do you want to say something?
No, at some place you burn the incense and then it causes the cloud, or not that it causes, but the cloud then appears?
Oh, so the Hashem's presence, okay, good. Hashem's presence often is represented by a cloud. Sometimes when Hashem wants to show that his divine presence is there, he has a cloud descend upon the Mishkan or upon the Kaporas.
Okay.
But you can also create a cloud. It's really not a cloud, it's really smoke,
yeah.
Right? When you burn incense, it creates like a mushroom cloud. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And this reference to a cloud might be referring to that. That Hashem says, when is it permitted to come and see me? When you create a cloud over the kaporas.
Okay.
That would be the alternative way of reading this.
On Yom Kippur.
Right, when he burns it, which we're going to talk about in a moment.
Can I ask one question about wording? Is there some relationship between paroches and kaporas?
There has to be.
Yom Kippur,
yes.
I mean, it's all the same
Okay, so the kaporas and Yom Kippur are exactly the same word. They mean atonement. The paroches is confusing because it's the exact same letters.
Right.
As kaporas. Yeah. All you're doing is taking the kaf and moving it down three letters, three spaces in the right, moving it pat, right? In the word kaporas, the kaf precedes the pay and the resh. In the word parochas, the kaf follows the pay and the resh. So clearly those words are related. But kaporas and Yom Kippur are not just related, they are the same word. The word means that it's a day of atonement, and the kaporas is the it's the noun of the word. It's the atonement.
Yeah.
The atoner. I don't know. The kaporas. So let's first look at the beginning of this pasuk, or the middle of this pasuk. So it says, where should he not go without being invited? He should not go into the sanctuary, past the curtain, which is in front of the kaporas, which is on the aron. That's very wordy. Why not just say, you can't walk in to where the Aron is?
Mm-hmm. It's too special not to be specific.
Okay, good. So one way of understanding this is the Pasuk is discussing something extremely special, and therefore you don't just say it, you build it up. You're not allowed to go past that curtain. You're not allowed to go to the holy place, which is past the curtain, which is in front of the Kaporas, which is on top of the Aron. Don't do it. It's much more dramatic that way. There's clearly a progression here. Holy place, past the curtain, which is in front of the kaporas, which is on top of the aron. A clear progression. Now, when the Kohen Gadol is going to go in there, that's the way it goes. He's going to go in there. He's going to enter the Kodesh by going past the parochas, past the curtain. And then he's going to come in front of the kapores, which is on top of the aron. That's the way it's going to go. The word kapores, as was already pointed out, it means the word Kippur. It means to atone. That's what the word means. So the Kapores is the atoner. It's the utensil that is the atoner. Now, really, it's a lid. That's what it is. It's a fancy lid. It's a lid with these fancy ornaments on top of the lid. That's what it is. Yet, it has its own name. It's not just the lid. It's the Kapores. And the Kapores is on top of the Aron. Now we know what Susan. Now we know what the Aron is. The Aron holds the objects that are most dear to us. As a people, they hold the items that symbolize our special covenant with Hashem. The Luchos symbolize that special covenant we have with Hashem, that He gave us the Torah. Obviously, the Sefer Torah itself certainly is that. So the Aron, we know, represents that connection between us and Hashem, the strongest object of connection between us and Hashem. The Aron would be similar. Actually, we'll talk about the Aron and the Kapores together, but the concept of the Aron and Kapores, which we discussed when we learned about it, that's almost like the ring that a woman has, that a man put on her finger. It's, what is that? That's a symbol of their connection. That's what it is. So that Aron, the Kapores, that unit is the symbol of the connection between us and Hashem. It's, and it sits in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We don't read the Luchos. The Luchos sit in the Aron. You never take them out and read them. Moshe brought them down. They're put in a box, and the box was put in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's it. We don't take them out and read them. It's not like the Sefer Torah, which we do take out and read from. Mm-hmm. This sits in a box, and it's, that's where it is. But it is the, it is that, that symbol of connection between us and Hashem, the fact that He gave us the Torah. The Kapores would be just a lid. But what is a lid? A lid is something which closes something up, but it's also the way that you open it up. The lid is the thing that closes and opens. It either denies access or gives access to what is in there. It covers the access point. Something was put in, the lid was put on. Is the Kapores ever supposed to be removed from the Aron? It's not ever supposed. Why would you remove it? What are you going to, now, if the Sefer Torah is in there, it could be, it would be removed to take out the Sefer Torah. That's a debate, exactly as I mentioned before, where is the Sefer Torah? But certainly as far as the Luchos go, they're in there and they're not ever removed. That's where they go. Now we learned, Wednesday night, we learned that there was a time when the Luchos were taken out of the Aron.
And hidden.
But anybody remember when the Luchos...
When the
Plishtim captured the Aron. So when they captured it back in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, so at that time, Goliath, he had taken the Aron, and he had taken the Luchos out of the Aron. And Shaul, King Saul, he wasn't king yet, grabbed the Luchos out of Goliath's hands and ran with the Luchos. And he saved the Luchos from the grubby hands of the Plishtim. So there it happened. It wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to remain inside of the Aron. So that lid is almost like the symbol that this covenant that Hashem has made with us is permanent. If He gave us a special gift to symbolize our relationship with Him, and He said, put it in a box, and then I want you to take a lid and put it on that box, well, we want that lid to be permanent. We don't want that covenant to ever be removed, God forbid. Hashem says it's a permanent covenant. That lid is.
Why didn't they find a way to steal it?
They weren't told to. Oh. They weren't told to. But it is a lid. So what is that lid called? The lid is called the Kapores, the atoner. That's what it's called. Because if you want to know what seals our covenant with Hashem, what makes it that we will never be severed from Hashem, and that is Kapores, that is atonement. Because to say that we are never going to challenge or do something against that covenant, unfortunately, we do sin individually and collectively, unfortunately. And we know we've done it many, many, many times. And every time that we as a people, God forbid, sin, or even individually when we sin, what we are doing is we are rejecting the covenant between us and Hashem. We're rejecting Hashem every time we sin. And the way that those sins do not accumulate and become a reason, God forbid, to sever that covenant is because there's a lid on the covenant. And that lid is called kapores. It is called atonement. That Hashem grants us atonement. He gives us a path to atonement. And that path, of course, Yom Kippur is the day of atonement. But there's also a process that is done on that day. And on that day and that day only is the time when avoda, when service is done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in front of the Kapores, which is on top of the Aron. The Atoner, which is on top of the Aron, meaning it is the thing that symbolizes the permanent seal over the Luchos, which were given to us by Hashem. So don't go in there unannounced. Don't go into the sanctuary past the curtain, because normally there's a curtain that you can't go past. That covenant is inside of a box, under a lid, behind a curtain, and you just can't go in there.
And that's where a cloud's going to appear.
That's
where Hashem.
Well, when he wants to, he brings a cloud over there. He speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu from the kapores that we spoke about. You might recall the symbolism of the the way the kruvim go.
Yeah.
It looks almost like a mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. Right? That is where Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the on Yom Kippur, that's when the Kohen Gadol is able to go in, only if he performs the service, which we're going to go through right now. The word parochas, which means curtain, is certainly related to kapores, as was pointed out. I can't tell you the exact etymological connection between them, but the fact that the curtain is the thing that separates us from the kapores, it makes sense that the words would be related. Mm-hmm. That the word parochas and kapores would be related words, because it is the curtain that divides us from the kapores, from the aron. So he should not come in whenever he pleases. So when and how should he come in? Now the when does not appear here. This is very curious. We will talk about this, please God, but not tonight. We'll talk about it hopefully the next class, because otherwise it's going to be a long time until we talk about it, since two classes for now will be in a while. But the when is not mentioned, but the how, not mentioned here. The when will be mentioned at the end of the discussion, but the how is going to be mentioned in detail. So again, he should not come in whenever he pleases, or however he pleases. So now the Torah has to tell you, what does he need to do? And then the Torah has to tell you, when should he do it? So we're going to start with the what, and then the when. So the Torah says, Bezos yavo Aharon ala Kodesh. With this, Aaron should come into the Kodesh. So it's going to be, first of all, a series of karbanos. Befar ben bakar lechatas, with a bull, that is for a chatas, for a sin offering, v'ayol la'ola, and a ram as a completely burnt offering. These two karbanos belong to the Kohen Gadol. They are not the karbanos of the people. We'll get to karbanos of the people in a moment. But these karbanos are specifically the karbanos of Aaron himself, that he has to bring a bull and he has to bring a ram. Now, before telling you what you do with this, the Torah describes what should Aaron be wearing. Now, we know that Aaron wears eight garments. He's the Kohen Gadol. But the Torah tells us these karbanos are different than other karbanos. He's not going to wear 8 garments. He will wear only 4 garments, like a Kohen Hedyot, like a non-Kohen Gadol, like a regular Kohen. However, even though it's going to be the same 4 garments as a regular Kohen, there will be a difference between the regular Kohen's between the regular Kohen's garments and the Kohen Gadol's garments of Yom Kippur. It says in Pasuk Daled, verse 4, Ksonis bad kodesh yilbash, he should wear a tunic of linen, that's kodesh, that's sanctified, umichnesei vad yuav besaro, and pants of linen should be on his flesh, uveavneit bad yachgor, and with a linen belt he should belt himself. Let me repeat that, because that's going to be the distinguishing point. With a linen belt, he should belt himself. And he should wear a linen hat. Big day kodeshim, they are sanctified clothing. He should wash his flesh in water, which means he should go to the mikvah. And he should don these clothing. The regular Kohen, all year round, wears these same 4 garments. The tunic, the pants, the belt, and the hat. He does not have the additional 4 garments of the Kohen Gadol. The additional 4 garments of the Kohen Gadol are the tzitz, which is the headband. It is the ephod, which is the apron. It is the choshen, which is the breastplate. And there is the me'il, the jacket. Those are the 4 additional articles of clothing. These 4 are the 4 articles of clothing that are worn by a regular Kohen. However, a regular Kohen's belt is not made of only linen. It is made of multiple wool and linen together, multiple strands together. But it is kilayim, it is shatnez, the belt of the regular Kohen. But on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol wears only linen. There is no wool. Only linen, all 4 garments are just linen. And that is special for Yom Kippur, that only the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur does this. And in order to do what he's about to do, that's a requirement, that he has to wear only these garments. Now, it says that he goes to the mikvah before he puts on these garments. The Kohen Gadol has to go to the mikvah before he enters the Beis HaMikdash any day of the year. In fact, any Kohen goes to the mikvah before they go into the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Tamid, Mishnah tells us that any time the Kohanim, when they wanted to participate in the bringing of the Karban Tamid, several different Kohanim participated in that Karban. If you wanted to participate, you got up early, went to the mikvah, and presented yourself to be ready to serve. Not everyone who presented themselves was chosen, but if you want to be in the running, you got to go to the mikvah and get dressed and get ready. And that's what they did. The mikvah is necessary. So it's not news to say that the Kohen Gadol needs to go to the mikvah before he performs the service. What is news is that even though he already went to the mikvah, he has to go again before he puts on the white garments, before he puts on these 4 garments. As the Gemara tells us, which we are going to learn about over here, the Kohen Gadol is going to change garments many times on Yom Kippur. The rule of thumb is that when he is doing a Yom Kippur service, that which is exclusive to Yom Kippur, he's going to wear these 4 garments that are only linen. That's it. And not the regular 8 garments of the Kohen Gadol. When he's performing a service that is done the rest of the year, then he will wear his 8 garments, the regular Kohen Gadol garments. And the process is going to be as follows. When we get more into the details, Blina, I'll put it on the board. But for now, there's going to be 5, I don't want to call them changes of clothing, but 5 different times that he puts on clothing, different clothing. There's going to be the 1st, 3rd, and 5th are going to be his regular 8 garments, whereas the 2nd and 4th will be the special Yom Kippur garments, which means when he comes to work in the morning of Yom Kippur, Kohen Gadol works on Yom Kippur, right? So when he comes to work on Yom Kippur morning, he puts on his regular 8 garments. Because the first thing you do in the Beis HaMikdash, the first carbon you bring is the carbon tamid, the daily carbon. That's not specific to Yom Kippur. So he wears his regular 8 garments. That's the first thing he does. Before he puts on those garments, he goes to the mikvah. Then when he's done that, he now is going to do a Yom Kippur service, which we're about to learn about. So he has to take off the 8 garments and put on the 4 purely linen garments. And before he does that, he has to go to the mikvah again. That's a second going to the mikvah. When he finishes the initial stage of the Yom Kippur service, then he's going to change back into his 8 garments in order to do part of the carbon musaf. Musaf, even though it's going to be the musaf of Yom Kippur, but musaf is not exclusive to Yom Kippur. Musaf is on Shabbos, musaf is on Rosh Chodesh, musaf is on all of the Yomim Tovim. So from musaf, he changes back into his 8 garments.
He doesn't just add the other four?
No. He takes off these 4, goes to the mikvah, and puts on the 8. That's the third wearing of clothing. And he does, as we'll see later, not the entire musaf, but he does part of the musaf service then. Then he's going to change out of his 8 garments, go back into 4 purely linen garments, in order to finish the Yom Kippur service. Before he does that, he goes to the mikvah a 4th time. When he finishes the Yom Kippur service, then he's going to remove those garments, go to the mikvah a 5th time, and put on his 8 garments yet again, in order to do the last carbon of the day, which is always the carbon tamid. There's a morning tamid, there's an afternoon tamid. The afternoon tamid is always the last carbon of the day. Also, the menorah has to be done. Different things have to be done at the end of the day as well. So he's the 5th time, he's also going to put on his 8 garments. So he's going to go from regular 8 garments to Yom Kippur 4 garments to regular 8 garments to Yom Kippur 4 garments to regular 8 garments. And every time he changes, he needs to go to the mikvah. So he goes to the mikvah 5 times on Yom Kippur. Yes?
So you answered it. I just wanted to know what he did the first time.
Okay. Yes. Now the difference is the first time he goes to the mikvah, he does it outside the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't come into the Beis HaMikdash yet. The other 4 are done inside the Beis HaMikdash. There was a mikvah in the Beis HaMikdash? Yes. It was on one of the side rooms. There was a mikvah. It was actually on the roof of one of the side rooms. And he would go there to go to the mikvah on Yom Kippur itself.
When he changes each time, is like the 3rd time he's putting on the 8 garments again, is he putting on the same garments that he put on first, or is it different ones?
Excellent question. So the 8 garments are the same, the ones he wears all year. But we will see later that the 4 garments, which he puts on twice, that's stage 2 and stage 4. It's there 5 stages. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through, we're going to discuss each of the stages. So stage 2 and stage 4, we'll see later that it's 2 different sets of Yom Kippur garments. One for the first stage and one for the second one, for stage 2 and stage 4.
And what makes it sacred? What makes the garments sacred? How do you make the garments?
That's also a good question. The Mishnahs discuss that. How do they become sacred? So the way they become sacred is that you sanctify them by giving them to the Beis HaMikdash. But if you give them to the Beis HaMikdash, then you don't own them. And yet they're called the garments of the Kohen Gadol. So that's a little tricky, how they can be called sanctified and at the same time they're owned by the Kohen Gadol. So that's a good question, how that works out.
Also, why is it okay to wear Shatnez belt?
So that already, we learned all the way back in Parashas Tetzaveh, mm-hmm. that Hashem commands that the Kohanim wear Shatnez, even though none of us are allowed to, but the Kohanim not only are allowed to, they're required to. And we pointed out at the time, which we're not going to go into now, but we did point out at the time that there are various things that you're not allowed to mix, milk and meat, for example. You're not allowed to crossbreed animals. There are different things you're not allowed to do. And most of the things you're not allowed to mix, there's no exceptions to it. You're not allowed to do it. Whereas here, shatnez, wool and linen, normally you can't. And then the Torah has situations where you're required to, which means that it's a little bit different than, you know, we can say that milk and meat is bad. That we can say. But we can't say that wool and linen is bad because there are times when you're supposed to do it. So we touched on it then. But yes, that is true. That is a good point that is required in certain cases in the Kohen Gadol and the other Kohen. Now, the, in addition to this, this point, as we just read, he has to go to the mikveh before he changes clothing, or when he changes clothing. In addition to changing to going to the mikveh, the Gemara also derives that, as you know, the Kohanim, before they did service in the Beis HaMikdash, they had to, besides going to the mikveh, they had to specially wash their hands and feet from what?
The kior.
From the kior, from the sink, from the basin, that the special one, which actually we mentioned this past week's parsha, that's the special one that was made with the mirrors of the women. That's the that has to be done. They have to wash their hands and feet. Besides going to the mikvah, they have to do that as well. The washing of the hands and feet of the Kohen Gadol had to be done 10 times. Once when he took off one set of clothing, and then again when he put on the other set of clothing.
Even though he'd been in the mikveh.
Yes, and even though he just washed his hands and feet.
Okay.
But it is a requirement to wash his hands and feet when he removes a set of clothing and when he puts on a set of clothing. So he ends up washing his hands and feet 10 times throughout the day of Yom Kippur and going to the mikveh 5 times throughout the day of Yom Kippur. This is even more striking when you think about the fact that none of us are allowed to wash anything on Yom Kippur, because washing is one of the things that's prohibited on Yom Kippur. Besides eating and drinking, you're not allowed to wash or bathe in any way. One is not even allowed to take a finger and put it under water in order to just enjoy the water. And one is allowed to get off dirt if there's something on them, but to simply just enjoy it, one is allowed.
Okay, so that's, as I understand, separating, that's the Kohen Gadol.
He's required to.
That's not us.
Right.
But there must be a real symbolism of besides the mikveh, hands and feet.
Yes. Okay, so let's hold off with that. Well, I mean, there's the hands and feet all year round,
right.
But here it's over and over again. So on the day of the year where everybody else is not allowed to bathe or wash at all, the Kohen Gadol is bathing and washing many more times than is necessary, it would appear. It's certainly not for hygiene. I mean, it's over and over and over and over again that he is both washing hands and feet and going to the mikveh. So it's one of these. So that's
because he's davening for us.
It seems that it's an extra measure of purity. The Kohen Gadol is supposed to be the purest person
on our behalf.
On the purest day of the year, going into the purest area. And we want it to be as tahar as possible. But it's not us. This is Hashem. Hashem is saying he needs to be as tahar as possible. So there's this constant washing, immersing, washing, washing, immersing, washing, washing, immersing, washing that is going on for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur.
He's not allowed to use cream.
No, no, can't use cream. You can't use cream. No. Okay, so that's the clothing that he puts on to do the Yom Kippur service. The Torah here doesn't tell you about the Tamid Shel Shachar, about the morning Tamid, because that you know already. That's something which we know from other places in the Torah. Torah here is only describing the Yom Kippur aspect of the day, not the regular things that go on in that day. The Torah continues. So he had a par, an isle. He had a bull for a sin offering, and an isle and a ram for a burnt offering, and from the Jewish people, he has to take 2 goats for a sin offering, and 1 ram for a burnt offering. So we have a total here that has been mentioned of 5 animals. We have a bull for a sin offering. That's the Kohen Gadol's sin offering. We have 2 goats that are a sin offering. That's the collective Jewish people's sin offerings. That's the 2 goats. Then we have 2 rams. One that's the Kohen Gadol's ram. One that is the ram of the people. And both of those are burnt offerings. That's what we have. Now these 2 goats are going to be the most interesting part of this whole thing. As you know, there's going to be a lottery, and one is going to be used as a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. The other one is going to get thrown off a cliff, which, what is that all about? So, right, that's where we're going to be tackling this. This is what we're in right now, that we're going to be discussing this. So, that's going to be the most interesting part of it. But there have been five animals mentioned. Two for the Kohen Gadol, three for the people. Three of the animals are sin offerings. Two are burnt offerings. Those are the offerings that are going to be mentioned here in Acharemos. But there's also the Musaf Karbanos. They're not mentioned here, because as I told you before, Musaf is not a Yom Kippur curiosity. Musaf is on many days of the year. Of course, there are special Musaf Karbanos for Yom Kippur, but nevertheless, the concept of Musaf is not exclusive to Yom Kippur. All of the Musaf offerings are mentioned in Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas goes through first Shabbos, and then Rosh Chodesh, and then Pesach, etc., and goes through all of the Musafs that we have. The Maftir, the last Aliyah, the second Sefer Torah, that is read on Yom Kippur, and in fact on all of the holidays, is from Parshas Pinchas. It's the Musaf offerings. That's what we read as the second Sefer Torah reading for all of the Yomim Tovim. So for example, we have Pesach coming up. So on the first day of Pesach, we're going to read the dramatic account in Parashas Bo of the death of the firstborn. That's going to be the main part of the reading on the first day of Pesach. We'll have five aliyahs from there. And when that's done, we're going to open up the second Sefer Torah, and we're going to read from Parshas Pinchas, because Parshas Pinchas has the Musaf offerings of Pesach. When we get to Shavuos, so the reading is going to be from Parshas Yisro, the dramatic reading of the giving of the Torah, of the Ten Commandments. That'll be five aliyahs from there. And then when we finish that, we're going to open up the second Sefer Torah, and we're going to read from Parshas Pinchas, because it's going to have the Musaf offerings for Shavuos. And the same thing plays out in all of the Yom Tovim, including Yom Kippur. After you read, on Yom Kippur, it's six aliyahs. After you read six aliyahs from Acharemos, which is the dramatic account of everything that happens on Yom Kippur with the Kohen Gadol, then we'll open up a second Sefer Torah and read from Parshas Pinchas, because it has the Musaf offerings of Yom Kippur. That's the system that is in place on all of the Yomim Tovim. So that means we have other karbanos besides these five. And those are the ones mentioned in Parshas Pinchas. What is mentioned in Parshas Pinchas? Let's turn there. Let's read it. It's very quick to read.
The Kohen Gadol is doing the shechting and all?
So I'll talk about that in a minute. The Kohen Gadol has to do everything on Yom Kippur. That's very tiring and difficult. Yes, we're going
to
discuss that.
Why he has to change the clothes? Well,
that's true. But that's true with every coin, every day. So in Parashas Pinchas, so hold our place here in Acharemos, on page 894, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, what is the Musaf of Yom Kippur? V'hikravtem ola laHashem, you shall bring a burnt offering to Hashem. Musafs are always burnt offerings. You should bring a burnt offering to Hashem. I should say mostly burnt offerings, as we'll see. You should bring a burnt offering to Hashem. Reach nichalach, which is a sweet smell. Par ben bakar echad, one bull. Ayel echad, one ram. Kivasim b'nei shana shiva, seven sheep. Timimim yulachem, unblemished, they shall be for you. One bull, one ram, seven sheep. Nine more offerings. And one more, skip ahead to Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Sirizim echad chatas, and one goat as a sin offering. Now notice here in Yud Aleph and 11, it says, these 10 offerings, one bull, one ram, seven sheep, and one goat, that's 10 animals. Nine of them are burnt offerings, one is a sin offering. And it says in Yud Aleph 11, Milvar chatas akipurim, besides the sin offerings of Yom Kippur that were mentioned back in Acharemos. Don't forget about those. Torah over here is invoking what we just read in Acharemos. That besides these 10 animals, don't forget we had more. The ones mentioned back in Parshas Acharemos and also ve'olas ha-tamid, and of course the tamid offering, which is done every single day, the morning and afternoon. So you have, in addition to our five that we mentioned here, you have 10 mentioned in Parashas Pinchas. I just will point out to you, although I do not want to get stuck in this because this will confuse everybody, but just to be aware that there is a debate in the Gemara whether the ram that was mentioned in Acharemos, that was brought by the people, remember there are two rams mentioned in Acharemos, one brought by the Kohen Gadol, one by the people. That one ram brought by the people in Acharemos, is that the same ram that is mentioned in Pinchas as one of the offerings of the Musaf? Or is it a separate ram? In other words, were there two rams given by the people or one ram given by the people? That is a debate in the Gemara between the various sages, and they bring proofs this way and that way. So that is a little bit of a debate. But the simple reading of the Torah certainly seems that there are five karbanos mentioned in Parshas Acharemos, 10 more mentioned in Parshas Pinchas, for a total of 15 karbanos, not including the tamid, which is two more, because one in the morning, one in the afternoon, which would be a total of 17 different animals that would be brought on Yom Kippur. And as Mrs. Wittenberg really just pointed out, all of this is done by the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol has to do everything on Yom Kippur. He is doing it by himself. It is not easy to be doing everything by yourself. It's, as we'll see, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, and the Kohen Gadol had to do it all. So those are the karbanos that are going to be offered. The Musaf offerings are not Yom Kippur offerings, meaning not special Yom Kippur offerings. Therefore, they're done in the eight garments, whereas the ones we read about here are done in the four garments, because they are special Yom Kippur offerings. One of these karbanos, which would be one of the two goats, is not going to be processed in the normal manner. The normal manner, of course, is you shecht it, you catch the blood, you put the blood on the altar, you burn certain things. That's the regular way it works. One of these things, which is the goat, is going to be dispatched. The Kohen Gadol is not going to be doing this. It's going to be dispatched to the wilderness and thrown off a cliff, which again we're going to discuss. But the other 14 animals are processed in basically the normal way, although we will discuss certain details to show what actually happens to those animals on Yom Kippur. Okay, so that brings us to Pasuk Ches. That's what we're up to. So I'm sorry, that we're up to Pasuk. No. We're only up to Pasuk Vav. We did verse 5. We're up to Pasuk Vav, which is verse 6. So we're gonna stop here. I'll just tell you, those two goats have to, we mentioned this when we were talking about Tsaras, those two goats need to be as identical as possible. They need to be the same height, the same general size, the same color. They should cost the same amount of money, the same age. As much as possible, you want these two goats to be as identical as you possibly can have them, because when we're going to see, when there's a lottery, either one could be the one that goes to Hashem, and either one could be the one that goes to Azazel that's going to be killed in the wilderness. So we'll see about that when we get to it. But the goal is to have them to be as identical as they can be. Okay. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.